Are you ready for the weekend yet? We have events, news, and a guest for you to enjoy this Lake Life weekend. Hello and welcome to another episode of Lake Life Weekend Podcast. We are already approaching weekend number 27 and summer has arrived. 4th of July weekend was a pure success. It was hot, it was beautiful, blue skies, and I saw a lot of people on the lakes. I've been driving around and I was hitchhiking a really nice boat ride, and I even tried waveboarding and I failed miserably, but it was fun. And please stay tuned today. We have lots of events, lots of news, and a very interesting interview guest today, Chris Schulke from the Ottertail County Historic Society, speaking about our favorite, Harry and my favorite spot, Phelps Mill, which is just beautiful to explore. And I'm excited to share this interview with you, and also some updates this weekend's festival of Phelps Mill. Some news, diving right into that. The roundabout south of Detroit Lakes, it's Highway 59 on the intersection of Becker 22. It's now partially open, so be aware there's a little bit of backup. I experienced that today in the sun, and so it's going to be a great project. Second roundabout, I think it's really good for traffic flow and safety. So that's almost completed. Later this month, they are predicting to have it all open. And then in Richville, a little town, a little summer fun is created by the Richville Cafe owners. After stopping the annual Richville Days event a few years back, the Rock and Horse Cafe owner Sandy stated that the town started to see less visitors, and so she decided to bring back some summer fun. And every Thursday, 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., there's an event. It's summer free pony rides, minnow races, and carnival games, and $5 hot dogs and root beer floats. So check out Richville Thursdays. It goes through the summer, and I believe end of August, there's an article in the Permanent Focus. You can check on lakelifeweekend.com. There is an event here, a local event, Minnesota Flyers Gymnastics. They have a Night of the Stars on July 20th at 6:30 at the Detroit Mountain. And you can support their program, and the fundraising goes towards Create a Fly Time, a program to bring physical fitness, movement, and sensory experience for children with special needs here. To support reduced tuition and provide scholarships and upgrade equipment, something we can encourage. So if you're interested in that, you will find more information on lakelifeweekend.com as well. Coming to this weekend's events, the 82nd Annual Northwest Water Carnival starts this Friday, July 7th, and we had Nate Woodard here in interview a couple weeks back. So there's lots, I think 10-day program. You definitely want to check that out. You Google Northwest Water Carnival Detroit Lakes, and you'll find information on 10 days of family activities in Detroit Lakes. It starts July 7th, 8 a.m. Here in Detroit Lakes. And also July 7th, there's a karaoke and DJ party at Zorbis at Detroit Lake. I think everybody knows where that is. Karaoke, DJ, light show, and dancing every Friday now from 10 p.m. till 2 p.m. 10 p.m. till 2 p.m. I guess that should be 10 p.m. till 2 a.m. So apologize. LakeLifeWeekend.com for the event schedule. On Saturday, July 8th, fly in, drive in at the Detroit Lakes Airport. 7:30 a.m. till 11 a.m. You can sign up for free airplane rides. And then there's a pancake breakfast. Ages 11 and older is $7, and ages 10 and under is $3 for the breakfast. And then you can sign up for the airplane rides and pilot's breakfast for free. So you fly in, and then there's also a classic car show. So you're more than welcome to come from the classic car clubs around. You can Google that also, and that's starting July 8th, 7:30. That's something that I would like to go to. And then all this weekend long, Saturday and Sunday, Phelps Mill Festival starts at 8 a.m. on July 8th, and it's over on 5 p.m. on July 9th. You Google Phelps Mill, it's just east of Underwood, a little bit, then you go on Highway 45, I think it was, off Highway 1. Phelps Mill Festival is an annual event in Lakes Country that takes place every second weekend in July. The event draws in hundreds, actually I heard thousands of people, making it the largest art and craft event in the area. Kids activities, artists, entertainment and food is available. Free parking and even a shuttle service if there's too many people. There's a $5 admission for adults, and then children 12 and under are free. There is also on Saturday the 6th annual Ride for the Future at the Detroit Lakes Pavilion, 9 a.m. till 1 p.m. The 6th annual Ride for the Future will take place this Saturday, and it's a 100-mile motorcycle ride created to bring awareness and support to the Boys and Girls Clubs of Detroit Lakes and Perm. Check-in begins at 9 a.m. and there will be lunch served and donated at Pit 611 Sports Bar and Grill. So I suppose it's a motorcycle run. I never understand that. I apologize. Those rides, Ride for the Future. Yeah, of course, it's a motorcycle ride, and then for the future for the Boys and Girls Club. So check that out and join if you're a motorcyclist and want to do a road trip. There's a garden tour fundraiser also on Saturday. It's by the Virgus Loonies Relay for Life team. It's 9:30 till 4:30. It's a 20-mile route stopping at a total of 6 Virgus area gardens. There's maps available at Virgus State Bank, at the municipal liquor store, and Serendipity and Crossroads Gardens, Garden Center. More information also here on our website. That sounds like a nice little trip as well. Miss Adventures at Zorbis on July 8th. Find that on our website or at Zorbis, Detroit Lakes. Heart and Soul Live on at Zorbis as well. That's the evening program then. It goes. It starts at 9 p.m. That's a big day. This weekend is full of events here. What else do I have? Patrick Murphy Live at Zorbis the following day. Oh my God, that's probably the Water Carnival highlights here. Heart and Soul will perform jazz and funk on Saturday, and then Sunday Patrick Murphy performs live acoustic music starting at 6 p.m. And on July 11th we have the Ottertail Summer Concert. We mentioned that before. There's Gospel Train who will be performing at the City Park in Ottertail. This group focuses on bluegrass and patriotic tunes with a hint of gospel. That sounds good. Tuesdays in the Park with Doc and the Scrubs, also July 11th, 7 p.m. till 8 p.m. Detroit Lakes City Park by the pavilion there. And that is this Tuesday, July 7th, starting at 7 p.m. Well, I guess I rushed through this program because I last time it was a little bit longer, 1 hour podcast, and I try to keep this at 40 minutes, 45 minutes. Convenient for you if you leave your home and you head into the weekend. I was hoping you just tune this in while you drive in the car, and then you have a 45-minute program until you are at the lake. So if that is a convenient time for you to tune in, or of course you can listen to this anytime, I appreciate you tuning in, and we have really growing numbers. I love it. Please keep emailing us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com with tips or requests. Take also advantage of our photo contest on Facebook. Follow us there. And I don't want to keep this any longer. Listen to our guest, Chris Schuker, talking about Phelps Mill and a lot of history of Ottertail County. Thank you for tuning in. Have a great weekend. Well, welcome to our interview part. I'm here with Chris Schuker of the Ottertail County Historical Society. He's the executive director, and I invited him to speak today about Phelps Mill and a little bit about Otter County history in general. And welcome, Chris.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate this. This is great. First podcast I've ever done.
Oh, good. Thank
you. So this is my initiation.
Hopefully many to follow.
Yes, yes.
I must say we are one of the only in the area, but maybe we stimulate some other people to do
this
a podcast.
This is the wave of the future, the way to go, to communicate with people. So I like that.
Thank you. Thank you. As a historian, that's interesting.
I don't deal with change very well. No, this is great.
I like it.
You have to communicate in different ways. However, especially younger people are listening, and we need to communicate in new ways, new forms, formats, new mediums.
This conversation begins totally different than I anticipated.
But
it's amazing. I like it because actually I will speak one little anecdote.
Sure.
I was at the library in Fargo a couple of years ago and got a tour. I'm a Rotarian, and they did a presentation to us as Rotarians, and the director of the library said that we cannot forbid the usage of mobile phones in our library. We will just have to ask to be properly on silent, and if one speaks, they have to just speak as with somebody in the library, because we will not keep the young to come to the library. And like I'm seeing, you're dealing with history, which is sometimes a topic that is maybe difficult to communicate, and we need to have modern tools.
Yes, we deal with technology all the time. I am not into technology myself necessarily, but I use it. We have to use it, and if we're going to keep people interested, we have to learn to the evolution of technology and modern information. And so we have to keep up with what's happening. I mean, as much as we can, because it seems to change every day.
Yeah.
So anyway, but it's interesting. We're using modern technology to talk history.
Yes.
There you go.
Let's talk about a little recent. You came. I learned to Fergus Falls, 1989, from Wisconsin.
I am a native of Wisconsin, and I went to the University of Wisconsin, got a degree in political science and history. And then it took a number of years. I really didn't know what I wanted to do. So I, was teaching for a while. And then one year I began working as a seasonal interpreter at a living history museum called Old World Wisconsin. That's where you actually dress up in character, and people do farm activities. They do foodways activities. I worked in a shoe shop and actually taught myself how to repair and make shoes. So as people were walking around, I was sitting there working on shoes as I would interpret the craft and the family who lived there. So after that, I went to get my master's degree at Eastern Illinois University down in Charleston, Illinois, and then started to apply for museum jobs everywhere. And fortunately, I was hired here at the Otter Tail County Historical Society, and have been here ever since. It's a wonderful area. The lakes and the rural nature and it's very diverse. You wouldn't think it's diverse, but we are people, landscape. So there's always something different and new and happening here, and the history itself is very fascinating.
Before we actually focus on Phelps Mill, while I have you here,
sure,
touch on. Can you briefly share historic highlights of the local area?
Well, okay, so here's one thing that's happening, and maybe you'll have me back at some point. And next year, 2018, is Otter Tail County's 150th anniversary.
Okay.
So 150 years ago, Otter Tail County was officially formed. And the county, even though it was formed after the Civil War, but it was right in the middle of that great westward push of European immigrants and Americans from other states. There was a great mass migration within the United States. And so Otter Tail County was right there in the middle of that. People, the land is fertile, river, lakes, there's all sorts of things that attracted people. And so they came to Otter Tail County. And, but the interesting thing is that the county was actually formed by a religious pilgrims, Clitheroe. I don't know if you the Clitheroe,
which
Clitheroe is the first permanent settlement, and it was established by a breakoff Mormon group called the Cutlerites. And so they were the first.
Where?
In Clitheroe, it's just in, it is,
let's see,
it's about 30, yeah, it's very small. Actually, the original settlement doesn't exist anymore. But the Cutlerites took up four homesteads in Otter Tail County in 1865, and it became the first permanent settlement. And it was a they came here to get away from religious persecution, and so they came to Otter Tail County. They found this area. And then the second settlement was by a German, mm-hmm. Joseph Albrecht. He was a renegade Catholic, Rush Lake. He was a renegade Catholic priest, and he established a colony here in Otter Tail County. And then after that, in the late 1860s and 1870s and so forth, then you had the influx of Scandinavian and German and Finnish and Norwegian, Swedes. All these groups came to Otter Tail County, in addition to many, many, many Civil War veterans that came after the war moved to this area as well.
Why? Yeah.
Well, and Phelps Mill will fit right into that. They moved to Otter Tail County because, again, the land was very fertile to grow crops, and there was plenty of land here. In addition, you have the Otter Tail River, the Pelican River, the Palme de Terre River, lots of resources, lots of water resources, and so they harness the rapids on these rivers for water power to start flour mills, sawmills, New York Mills, which is another town just north of here, started out as a lumber center, a sawmill. New York Mills, the mills were the sawmills. Perham flour mills, there were several flour mills here in Perham where this broadcast is originating from. And so they utilized, again, the rapids on the river, the water from the river, to grind wheat. Now, the other thing is that wheat was the primary cash crop, all right? So this land was perfect up here in Minnesota to grow wheat. And so farmers would grow wheat to earn some money. And Phelps Mill was a rural flour mill. And so that was the way to, that was really the first industry in Otter Tail County was flour milling.
Hmm. And it started all back 1880s?
Well, it started as early as in the late 1860s. James Craigie was a Scotsman, and he started the first flour mill by Otter Tail Lake. He ground flour and or turned wheat into flour, and so he started the first flour mill. And then Fergus Falls started and in the early 1870s, and they had a number of flour mills in Fergus Falls, harnessing the rapids along the river. And again, same way with Perham, Pelican Rapids, even small towns like Elizabeth and Underwood, and they all these little towns at one point or another had a flour mill where farmers, again, would take their wheat to be ground into flour. So it was very regional, and you see people trying to get back to that nowadays. It was a regional economy. And Phelps Mill embodies that. The guy who started Phelps Mill was a man named William Thomas, and he was a guy from Wisconsin, and he was in the flour and feed mill, feed industry. And he noticed, he took up land along the Otter Tail River in Maine Township, and there was a natural drop in the river, a natural rapids in the river, and so he built a dam and then started this, built the flour mill. And Phelps Mill first got started in 1889. So that's when they first started to grind flour. And it was an immediate success. Farmers would bring wagon loads of wheat and would be ground into flour and then, of course, sold on the open market. And for a number of years, Phelps Mill, which is not in the, near any town, but it was just much easier for farmers to bring their wheat to a mill close by in their wagons And then they would have it ground into to flour.
Would they take the flour back or sell the wheat? How did that work?
Well, they would bring their sacks of wheat. The miller would grind it into flour, and then William Thomas would pay the farmers directly. So he wasn't in the business of selling flour, but either the farmers would sell the flour or Maine. It was not ever called Phelps Mill. It was really known as Maine Roller Mills. Mm-hmm. Then they would also sell flour under different brands. But primarily, it was sold to local stores in various communities, so the farmers would do the selling directly.
Okay, so it was
flour.
A service. Milling was actually just
a service.
It was a service,
that's
kind of
right.
Like sewing a shirt, or like it was just a service.
Right,
you bring,
yeah. Kind of like a blacksmith who would, you'd bring your wagon in to be fixed or, repaired, or a furniture maker to have a chair made or a table made. Well, you had a flour mill who would grind the wheat for you into flour, and then you would take the flour and sell it yourself.
I didn't know that. I thought they would just buy the grain or the wheat and then actually process it, so to say, and then sell it off or something.
You know, and of course that happened, because what was the downfall of rural flour mills like Phelps Mill was that the big Minneapolis mills came into being. You know, the Pillsbury Mill and so forth. And it became much more easier. And then, of course, when the railroad came through Otter Tail County, it became much cheaper for farmers just to sell their wheat and then ship it to the big flour mills in Minneapolis. So they wouldn't actually get their flour back.
It was more,
they wouldn't get their flour back. They would just sell the wheat to, agents, and then who would ship it down to the big mills in Minneapolis.
It was more profitable that way.
Absolutely.
It was
much cheaper. And so mills like Phelps Mill could not compete with the big flour mills down in the Twin Cities. But that, Phelps Mill continued. They built actually until way after the turn of the century, they built a addition in 1905 to grind rye and buckwheat. And Phelps Mill didn't actually close officially until 1939. By then, it was more of a grist mill, so you would just, for feed, not for flour, but for feed. And it finally closed its doors in 1939.
Oh, wow.
So what's the fascinating thing, and I really encourage people to come to Phelps Mill, is that, most flour mills by that time, they didn't stand. I mean, there was so much flour dust in the air, a lot of them burned, or there were explosions. And so Phelps Mill has been able to close in 1939, and the original machinery is still in place. The original machinery is there, and so for decades it just stood there. No fires, lightning didn't hit it, minimal damage, minimal vandalism. And so it finally became a county park in 1965. And so the machinery was, cleaned up, kind of put back into place, it is there as a, you kind of step back in time when you go out to Phelps Mill, because there are, I can think of no other flour mill in Minnesota in which all the original machinery is still intact. So you'll see the huge turbines from, 1889, and the sifters, and the, all the stuff that's intact. Flour milling was kind of complicated, so don't ask me how actually.
I've been there many times. It looks really kind of like a miracle.
But that's all the original machinery from, 1889, and then the addition in 1905. Nothing has changed. Very, very little has changed, which is why Phelps Mill is such a resource, because it is really a, it's a step back in time.
Yeah. Before we dig in there, you mentioned many, many little mills. How many mills in Otter Tail County did we have back?
Oh, gosh.
Do we know? Like 50,
well,
20?
There was certainly upwards of, 20 mills.
Mm-hmm.
There were five alone in Fergus Falls. And there were a number of others around the county, but there was upwards of 20 mills, flour mills, in Otter Tail County.
And Phelps Mill is the only one that is still there?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, there is no other flour mill. Fergus Falls has the Red River Mill, but that was its big brick building, and it was built in 1919. But all the machinery is out of that, too. But that's a big, big commercial brick building. But there's no other, you know, pre-20th century,
yeah,
flour mill that is left standing. And Phelps Mill is one of the few in Minnesota that is left standing. And with all the machinery still intact, I think it's singular.
Yeah. And when it shut down in 1939, and the Thomason family, was it Thomason?
Well, William Thomas, he started Thomas. It. He did end up selling it to a man, then a man named Evenson had the mill until the 19... He finally closed the doors in 1939.
And did he leave? Or like, how was it that it was preserved till 69 for 30 years?
It was just closed up. I mean, could you walk in? I'm sure kids broke into the mill all the time. But remarkably, I think it just became kind of a symbol of the old rural life. And so people just kind of left it alone.
There's not a lot of homes, residences around. Like
no,
maybe
there's
six,
not.
Maybe
right.
A few new.
But I think a lot of people always jumped off the bridge to go swimming and so forth and so on. And but it is in kind of a remote spot. But for some reason, people just left it alone. And I would like to think that it's out of respect.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of a symbol of a way of life that no longer existed. You know.
I speak to many people, and I often mention Phelps Mill because I do a lot of road trips. And then, surprisingly, I hear people that ask me, "Where's that? What is that?" And we didn't even say where it is. It's north of Highway 1. Is it Highway 1?
Yeah, it's on a county, Otter Tail County, Highway 1, and then you take County Road 45.
Yeah.
North.
It's
about 2 miles.
East of Underwood.
It is east of Underwood, Minnesota, and so County Road 1, east of Underwood, Minnesota, and then you take County Road 45 for maybe two miles.
2 miles,
yeah. And I would encourage people, Google Phelps Mill.
You find it.
Phelps Mill Park, and you'll find it. And actually, it was saved. There was, in the early 1960s, there was a woman who really took it upon herself to save the mill because it was crumbling. I mean, it had been empty for, you know, decades and decades, and it's wood frame. And so while it wasn't going to fall into the river anytime soon, it was only a matter of time before the foundation would just rot and it would collapse. So a woman named Geneva Tweeten is the one who initiated the effort to have Otter Tail County buy Phelps Mill and have it be a part of a county park. And so that is one of the big reasons why it's preserved now. It is owned by Otter Tail County. It's part of a county park. And so they've been able to invest a little bit of money into the work on the foundation, into the painting, and just, you know, they have a caretaker that they hire that's stationed there year-round. And so...
Oh, he lives in that house?
He lives in the house across the street. That's right. That's right.
Where the ice cream shop was?
No, not in that. It's a brown house right across from the park.
Okay.
You're right. The ice cream shop, which unfortunately is closed, was a general store.
Yeah.
Because Phelps Mill was part of a little bit of a larger community. There was some services. There was a general store, and there was... a restaurant there at one time and a cheese factory and so
really?
Forth, which are all gone. Yes, unfortunately, those are long gone. But so Geneva Tweeten got the county to buy it, and they've been able to invest some resources. And there is a group called Friends of Phelps Mill, and we've kind of taken it upon ourselves to add some interpretation to the mill. So when you go through the mill, you will see signs on some of the machinery. You'll see, you'll be able to walk through the mill and find out how it worked, because the process of grinding wheat into flour is really complicated, and I can't pretend to understand it. But we do have signs up that say this machine was used for grinding, this machine was used for sifting, and so forth. So you can be able to walk through and get an idea of what the machines were used for.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the museum. Not only that, there's a park with a shelter and barbecue. I think there's a lot of square feet. Probably 10,000, or how many square feet? The park is large.
The park is large, and because of the mill, because of the historic background, Phelps Mill is one of the most recognizable historic images in Minnesota. You have a photograph of Phelps Mill and people will recognize. I mean, it's everywhere. It was down for years. There was an image. Explore Minnesota had Phelps Mill up on you got off the airport or off an airplane at the airport. You know, and there was a photograph of Phelps Mill. So it's very, very recognizable. So and then you have, you know, some shelters there, and it's kind of a nice natural setting. The river is right by the park. And so many people have family reunions and weddings, and just about every day during the summer, you will find people there. They're either floating on the river, they're having picnics, they're fishing. There might be a wedding going on. And of course, the big event that is happening this weekend is the Phelps Mill Festival, which is an arts and crafts festival, which is probably the single biggest event in Otter Tail County. More people come to the craft show, the craft festival, than any event, certainly in this area.
Oh, really? Is that big?
Oh, it's huge. Thousands of people come. And I like to think part of the reason, besides the great, you know, things that people can buy, is you have this iconic background, this historic setting that people just find soothing and relaxing. And a lot of people will be walking around the mill and the river, and it's just kind of this idyllic setting that you just don't find very many other places.
What I think fascinating and... thank you for this big picture, but
sure.
Like the museum is like the doors seem always open. Now I know there's a caretaker, so
there's
he must open it in the morning and he must close it at night.
Right.
But there's no guard, nobody watching you. And
well,
then there's
right.
three levels. There's a little TV introduction at the beginning where
right.
you can watch a video spoken by you. That's
yep.
how I got in contact
right.
with you. Actually, I saw an NPR program, I think. Or
it was a public television, yes.
Yeah,
it was yes,
public
television, yep.
And then there's three levels, three floors, and you just wander free. There's actually, I've never really experienced vandalism. Very respectful.
But that is the problem. It's, you know, we worry about that. Because there could, at some point, someone is going to leave a stray cigarette
mm.
or you know, accidentally in the mill. And we hope that never happens. But if that happens, you know, it's wood frame and it's dry and it could go up in flames in a matter of minutes. And so we hope and pray that that never happens. But it is open. It doesn't cost anything. You don't have to pay to get in from sunrise until sunset through the summer. You can walk through. And I think people appreciate that. There's never many places you can go to where you don't have to pay to get in.
Mm, that's true.
You have to pay to get in every little park or every little museum. But Phelps Mill is just open for public enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
And when people walk in, again, like I said earlier, it's like taking a step back in time. So I think they kind of, people respect that.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to keep it the way it was. So you don't see... you don't see much vandalism. You don't see people leaving cans and wrappers, and you know, it's just it's kind of a respectful thing.
Yeah. No.
Well, so I'm hoping that continues. You know, but I'm thinking, you know, this broadcast will help people realize what a historic treasure Phelps Mill is, and to keep it that way.
I hope so too. I hope so too.
Right?
I hope so too. How can we help? I didn't even see a donation box. So one has to contact the Friends of Phelps Mill.
Well, it's a little different because it is owned by the county.
Okay.
So, you know, it's funded by the county, but the Otter Tail County Historical Society has account for Friends of Phelps Mill, in which we, again, do some interpretation. For instance, when you go, if you go out to the mill, on this, side of the mill where the, by the dam, by the walking bridge,
yeah.
There's a old metal, there's an old turbine out there, a power turbine from another mill in Otter Tail County that we recovered, kind of like an archaeological expedition, down, called the Parkdale Mill, and that was down by Dalton. And we recovered this turbine and brought it out to Phelps Mill and set it up, and we have a couple of signs. But it shows in the small miniature version how a turbine works, how water would go into the turbine and turn the machinery. It was all water powered, no electricity, you know, when they opened. There was no water wheel, like you think of the big water wheel going around. And so it was done by a turbine. And so these are the type of projects that, we try to do. So to add some educational, some interpretive elements to people's experience when they go to Phelps Mill.
So you have a strategy where you want to add value, educational components?
Oh, like, you know, if we had, absolutely. I mean, what I would really like to see would be guided tours. So there is a little more supervision. So, you know, you could hire some people to throughout the summer season to be at Phelps Mill who would take groups of people on a tour of the mill, go on the main floor, go on the second and third story and talk about the machinery, talk about the history like we've been doing today. So actually have a guided interpreter program.
That sounds interesting.
You know, and but that, again, that takes time to develop, and people just aren't going to do it for free.
No.
So you'd have to have enough resources to be able to kind of pay people for on a summer job to do that. I think that would be great.
I agree.
You know, like any historic house, you go to a historic house museum, you're often guided through that house by someone in costume, and that's what we would like to do at Phelps Mill. That's the long-term goal.
Cool.
That would be good.
I'm not volunteering, but I really would like to support that.
Well, you know, get out your checkbook and let's do it. No. But I think that, you know, in the long term, that's been a goal of mine for a number of years. And, you know, someday it'll come to fruition.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean it. Yeah. Maybe even somebody that we speak to here can envision that and wants to support. Who knows?
Sure.
So this upcoming weekend, we have the festival.
Right.
And we want to invite everybody to explore.
Absolutely.
And to enjoy and
absolutely
to see the crafts. About the festival, we have a regional artists show. Do you know anything about the festival itself?
Well, not much, except that there's some very good art. I mean, it's you don't have just crafty things, but you have some really good artisans at the mill, at the festival. And so I'm not sure exactly how many that they have, but they have you know, booth after booth of artisans. They also have food booths, some entertainment, and it's all local. It's a local organization selling, you know, hamburgers and you know, popcorn and all sorts of different food. So it benefits local organizations. I think, you know, Purim, I don't know if the Lions Club has some kind of role in this, or Battle Lake and Underwood and Dalton, all these little towns. So you know, you're by a bratwurst, you're supporting the Battle Lake Lions Club, which in turn supports all sorts of different civic causes. So it stays locally, and but they have entertainment as well, music, comedians, so it's a great, it's just a great way to spend a day. And I know the last couple of years they have had storms on Sunday. It's a Saturday and Sunday show, but I think the weather for this weekend looks like it's just going to be very nice.
Yeah.
So come out and enjoy.
Yeah, we like to see many of you. Well, if you, I think we, do you want to add anything?
I don't think so. You know, again, Phelps Mill. It's a definite part of Otter Tail County, but I would encourage your listeners, if you want to know more about just Otter Tail County history in general, Can I put a plug in for the...
Absolutely. Find
us, Otter Tail County Historical Society. We have a pretty active Facebook page, social media presence. So find just Otter Tail County Historical Society. Find us on Facebook. We do all sorts of events around the area. And
you have a website.
We have a website, and we have a fine museum
in Fergus Falls.
So I encourage people
on the west side of town.
On the west side of town. So yeah. I encourage people to stop by and visit us.
Yeah, I always see it when I go to Aldi, the new German grocery store. So I meant to stop by so many times, but it's right in that area.
Right in that area.
What is it, Fleet Farm, I think, and I see it.
Right. You can't miss it.
No. Well, thank you so much for coming and sharing this. And hopefully we'll see each other again no later than speaking about the 150th anniversary.
Yes, please, have me back. We'll talk about Otter Tail County's 150th next year.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, this was already our newest episode of the Lake Life Weekend podcast. We sure hope you enjoyed it. Tune in again next week with another great guest and updates. Always check out our website, lakelifeweekend.com. And if you have some comments, please feel free to email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com. And you have a wonderful weekend ahead.